Welcome back, Brewers fans, to another episode of the Barrel Banter. I'm your host, Peter Goh, and David, quite the news that we received this week about the worst case scenario. I mean, Brandon Woodruff probably out for the entire 2024 season due to the shoulder surgery, and there's so much to talk about. I mean, we had on the docket to talk about the grades of the Brewers pitching staff this year, and we will still get to that this episode, but we've got to address this first, which really impacts the 2024 season. What was your initial thoughts and reactions to the breaking news around Woodruff surgery?
It's terrible. I mean, I think I said in the first message that I sent was it's tragic. It's possible Woodruff never throws a pitch again in the big leagues. Let's not jump to that conclusion, but it certainly is possible. We don't know if he'll ever be the same again. It really is extremely unfortunate news, not only for the Brewers, but even maybe more so for Brandon Woodruff himself as a pitcher and as a person.
Yeah, I think I feel for Woodruff probably more than I guess the Brewers, and as a Brewer fan. Obviously, I care about the Brewers, but to see a guy like Woodruff, who essentially has played, you know, his entire career, not making a lot in terms of baseball player money, and I know people are going to say, well, he's made whatever $15 million or something across his career, but still, he's been an elite pitcher and one of the best pitchers in franchise history. To think that he could have thrown his last pitch in Milwaukee, who would have thought? So, in terms of, like you said, we don't know exactly what's next for him, but it's not a minor surgery. Who are some of the players, if we look back to find similar injuries, who are some of the pitchers that have had the surgery, and what were some of the results that they had?
Julio Urias is the most recent example, and maybe the best comp. There's not really a perfect comparison for Woodruff. He had the surgery early 2018. Johan Santana, Dallas Braden, and Rich Harden all had the surgery, and that was between 10 and 15 years ago for each of them. So that one's a little bit different. Johan Santana was older, had probably 2,000 innings under his belt at the big league level. So that, of course, creates a different scenario. Dallas Braden, Rich Harden, not pitchers to the caliber of Brandon Woodruff, but Santana, Braden, and Harden, none of them ever pitched in the big leagues after the surgery. So there is some concern with this being a major surgery. We think of Tommy John surgery as more or less a routine operation now, especially if you're not the one undergoing the surgery. But shoulders are where it gets complicated. Jimmy Nelson, of course, being probably the biggest example, completely different injury and surgery, but still shoulder surgery, and maybe a cautionary tale of what can go wrong with a shoulder surgery or the injury as a whole. And I think that's maybe a downside, a bad outcome, but a possible one nonetheless for Woodruff would be something like Jimmy Nelson, where he's only thrown about 35 big league innings since 2017, and he has not been the same pitcher.
Yeah, it's a really bleak outlook. I mean, Julio Urias, that is, of the Dodgers, came back in 2019, and he's been solid. He's been really good. I mean, in 2022, he had a 2.2 ERA in 175 innings. 2021, he had an ERA around 3 in 55 innings. So, I mean, he's still been pretty good. But like you said, Johan Santana, Dallas Braden, Rich Harden didn't see the mound again. So the thought of that even being on the table for Woodruff is really significant. So where does that, I guess, in terms of what the Brewers' options are, you've got Woodruff, who's in arbitration. The Brewers have the option either to pick him up, expected about $12 million in arbitration. Deadline for that is November 17th. So we'll know what the Brewers decide to do in the next month here. But the Brewers can probably pick him up for about $12 million next year. He's probably not going to play for the Brewers, or if he is, it's only going to be at the very end of the season, which is, I think, being, from what I see historically, seems being overly optimistic to think that the Brewers might get Woodruff on the mound next year. So it doesn't make a lot of sense the Brewers pay him $12 million for his probably time off the field next year. So where do they go from here? What other options do they have besides picking up the $12 million option?
Yeah, it's a difficult issue, and one, of course, that the Brewers weren't expecting to deal with. Now, his $12 million is the expected amount he'll get in arbitration, but it's possible they could allow to a lower dollar amount for 1 year. Knowing that he's not going to get 1 year $12 million on the open market, they might be able to come to an agreement at, say, $5 million, $4 million, in the off chance that he is able to make a late season comeback. the Brewers have him. The Brewers have him around. It would also maybe be, now it's a little bit demoralizing that it's a lower cost, but at the same time, kind of a thank you for what you've done for the organization so far. We're going to continue to employ you as even as you're rehabbing, even knowing that there's a decent chance that you may not be able to pitch at all this year. Now, do you do that with $12 million as the Brewers? I'm not sure if you do that. So if they're able to come to an agreement at a lower cost, I think maybe $4 or $5 million might be worth it.
That to me seems like the best option, in my opinion, would be the Brewers and Woodruff getting together and making that happen. Like you said, a one-year small deal that's not going to move the needle significantly for the Brewers as a team in payroll. Keeps Woodruff around, because you think about anchors of the organization and of the clubhouse, like Woodruff's been there since 2018. And he's got to be one of the leaders in the clubhouse just from the outside looking in. So there's some value to that. And yeah, if the Brewers have the option of like a 1 year, $4 million deal, I don't know. I'm not necessarily, I think I probably would be okay with it because of, like you said, what he did for the franchise. It keeps him in Milwaukee, and then Woodruff's a free agent at the end of 2024 season. So it also increases the likelihood, if he is able to come back at all, it increases the chance he stays as a Brewer, which seems to be the desire of the Brewers and Woodruff for the most part in his tenure with the Brewers. But besides that, would there be any reason to believe that maybe a 2 year option could make some sense that would be beneficial for the Brewers and for Woodruff? Do you see any value or likelihood that could happen?
It's possible. I think even before this update on the injury, the surgery taking place, there was that possibility because we knew there was a chance that this would keep him out for maybe the earlier parts of 2024. So Woodruff taking essentially a one-year contract after his expected free agency, that would give him a year to establish himself as healthy, show what he can do in a full year, and hopefully boost his free agent value. Now, the surroundings of that are a lot different. Expecting that he won't pitch at all next year, I think it would be advantageous for Woodruff. I think the Brewers, it would be a gamble that could pay off very well. Now, if Woodruff comes back 2 years from now and is even 90%, even, I mean, that's a pretty big if, but if he comes back and is 90% of the pitcher that he was, $12 million for that is definitely a good value. For Woodruff, does it make sense? I'm not sure, because you look at how the recovery might go, the timeline. Woodruff, even if we're looking at a year, 12, 14 months even, it gives him time where he can prove to teams next offseason that he's healthy. So if Woodruff is recovered from the surgery and it's, say, January of 25 maybe, then Woodruff goes and is sitting 95, 96 in a bullpen session. His pitches look sharp. Maybe he throws in some live ABs. Maybe he goes and pitches in winter ball. Probably not. But does something of that nature to prove to teams that he's healthy. I think then that pitcher might be worth 15, 16 mil, even to a team like the Dodgers, or especially to a team like the Dodgers or the Yankees, teams that can supplement Woodruff with more depth. And that might be where the upside of not signing a 2 year deal is for Woodruff. On the other hand, he comes back and he's 91, 92. I mean, that pitcher is not getting 12 mil. So then you don't have the guaranteed money up front that you would have had from the Brewers. Plus, not to mention, if he doesn't sign a 2 year deal and doesn't show willingness to, maybe the Brewers do non-tender him and maybe he doesn't end up getting a contract for this upcoming year and doesn't get paid. So there are a lot of layers to this where it's just a really difficult situation if you're Woodruff or if you're the Brewers.
Yeah, it leaves a gaping hole in the rotation as well. I mean, the Brewers had the best ERA in all of baseball. So on the one hand, they did that with, you know, what, 60-70 innings from Woodruff in the regular season. But if you look at the rotation under contract at the moment, that would leave Corbin Burnes, Freddie Peralta, Adrian Hauser, Aaron Ashby, and Robert Gasser essentially as five starters under contract. Now, obviously, big caveat to that, the Brewers could re-sign Wade Miley, Julio Teheran, Colin Ray, other starting pitchers on the market. But that looks like a very, very different starting rotation, one that goes from being arguably the best in all of baseball to, what, above average?
The quality of the rotation, I mean, it's all dependent on health. If Burnes gets injured, this rotation is not very good. Freddie's a middle to lower half two starter, I would say. Adrian Hauser is a capable four starter, But he's never been more than a four starter for the Brewers. He's the third best option here. Aaron Ashby is coming off shoulder surgery. He was mostly healthy in September rehabbing, but will he be able to hold up over the course of a year? He's still never thrown a full year at the big league level. So that's concerning to see, to expect Ashby to be a starter for most of the year. Robert Gasser hasn't thrown a single pitch in the major leagues. You've got Ethan Small, who's really more of a reliever now. And then beyond that, it's Jansen Junk. It's Caleb Bosley. I mean, these guys, Junk could be maybe a Colin Ray. I would say that's the upside of Junk, at least in the 2024 season. But really, I mean, this rotation is not deep. I think they have to add to be competent even in the starting rotation.
All right, so final question here before we get to the grading, and I definitely do hang on here if you're listening, because I'm excited to get to the grading of the Brewers pitching staff. It's a lot more uplifting, I think, than this first topic. But final question here, Corbin Burnes, where does that leave the Brewers? Would you say it's more likely or less likely the Brewers trade Burnes in the offseason? And then what would be your preference on the Brewers trading Burnes or letting him go?
Personally, I'd prefer that they trade him, but if they hold on to him, I won't be upset, because it's a sign that the Brewers want to compete and they want to be competitive again this year and not maximize their window, which has frustrated me to some degree. However, I think it might be advantageous to trade Burnes, because maybe this team could squeak by and win the division without Woodruff. They had Woodruff for less than half the year and still won the division by nine games. So it's possible. Now, I'd also think Cincinnati will be better next year. Chicago might be. Pittsburgh will probably be better. St. Louis probably will be better. It's going to be a more competitive division. Do you say we're probably not going to win the division? We're going to trade Burnes, get back maybe one or two, maybe one potential top line starter who hasn't pitched in the big leagues. Maybe he's a AAA arm in exchange for 1 year of Burnes. And then we have that pitcher for 5-6 years. I think that's reasonable, that maybe that's a trade that could be worked out. And I think that might play to the Brewers' advantage if they're looking to compete for the next 5 years, which I think that they're more equipped to compete from 25 to 29 than they are to compete in 2024, given Woodruff's injury.
Yeah, I think it makes it even more clear that you're right, that the Brewers are likely going to be better in 25 to 29, or have a better chance to contend for a World Series championship. But it is always tempting to give up a chance where I would say the Brewers are maybe favored to win the division, but they weren't favored to win it this year and they won it by 8 games. Now you lose Woodruff. I bet you they won't be favored either, at least in the national media. And I can see the case more so this year, this coming year in 2024, that maybe the Brewers aren't favored to win the division. But Cincinnati, I mean, are you going to favor Cincinnati? Are you going to favor St. Louis?
I don't think it'll be St. Louis. I think Cincinnati will be the trendy breakout pick, because they were the trendy pick in June when they were running off that streak of 13 in a row or however many wins. And they've got those guys for a full year. Maybe they add pitching. I think they're going to be the trendy, oh, the Reds are going to win the division and act like it's a big, bold prediction. But I mean, I don't know that that's necessarily a wrong or a bad prediction. If they add pitching, the Brewers have more competition coming. Pittsburgh may be above 500 next year. St. Louis could bounce back and be above 500. Chicago is maybe an above 500 team. So I think the division next year might be a grouping of teams between 76 and 84 wins. And then the team that wins 88, which is what we said this year, but the team that wins 88 may be the one that wins the division.
Well, and it's still, when you think about historically and both currently in the division, that's a weak division. I mean, it's a balanced division. You don't have the Royals. You don't have the Tigers or the Rockies in the mix. Like you said, every team in there could compete, and conceivably, maybe every team could win the division. I don't really see Pittsburgh winning the division, but everybody's going to probably be somewhat close. And so, yeah, I do think when you think about a winnable division, next year is really about as winnable as they come by, and especially with the team the Brewers have.
I think this year's division was more winnable than next year's will be, though.
I would say it turned out to be more winnable, but I don't think necessarily going into the season that I actually don't think that necessarily that this was a more winnable division than the next year necessarily. I think as a whole, the division will be better next year, primarily because of the Reds and Pirates taking some steps forward. But we have the whole offseason to address the upcoming season. So let's turn to our pitching grades. Like I said, a little bit of a more uplifting topic to talk about today, and start with the Brewers ace, Corbin Burnes, who really just finished one of the best three-year stretches in franchise history. Of course, he won the Cy Young. He's been an all-star every single year. The list goes on and on. He wasn't quite the pitcher that he was in 21 or 22. I mean, we've got people saying that he was like a good two or a good three this year, or, you know, acting like he had a bad year this year. And when you set your bar at winning the Cy Young, sure, you could say it was a down year, but it was not a bad year. So tell us a little bit about Corbin Burnes' season, and give me the grade for Corbin Burnes.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and talk about Burnes and then continue with the rest of the rotation. Like you said, Burnes finished one of the best three-year stretches in franchise history. Maybe Teddy Higuera in the mid-80s was better, partly because of volume. But either way, Burnes, excellent three-year stretch. Cy Young in 21, All-Star all 3 years, led MLB in ERA, strikeouts per nine, and walks per nine. Strikeout-to-walk rate in 21. Last year, he led the NL in both strikeouts and games started. Believe it or not, this year, he actually led the National League in WHIP. People acting like he had a bad year. WHIP isn't the be-all, end-all, but still, it's a pretty important stat to be leading the league in. He's the only pitcher over the past 3 years with 500 or more innings and a sub-3 ERA. He also leads the National League in strikeouts over the stretch. And yeah, Burnes did have a down year compared to the previous 2 years, but he still had an excellent year. It was a continuation of the run as one of the best pitchers in the National League, one of the best pitchers in franchise history. So it was a little bit of a letdown. I'd still give him a B+ for having a very good year. Brandon Woodruff, we spent a lot of time talking about his future, but the past year, actually, when healthy, was very good. Over the past 3 years, 2.70 ERA. Believe it or not, pitchers with at least 350 innings, he leads all of MLB in ERA with 2.70. And Woodruff's maybe even been as good as Burnes, for as good as Burnes has been. Health was the issue, of course, this past year. 2.28 ERA, though, when he was healthy. That was second in MLB among all starters with at least 60 innings. Currently the franchise leader in ERA, WHIP, and strikeout-to-walk rate. And really, when he was healthy, he was outstanding, but unfortunately, he only threw 67 innings. I'm going to give Woodruff an A because I think it's out of his control that he was hurt. So to penalize him for getting hurt, I think is a little bit unfair. Freddy Peralta had kind of a weird season. 4.70 ERA in the first half. That was bottom 10 of all qualified starters in the NL. But his 2.81 ERA in the second half was fourth in all of baseball, fourth best. So he really turned it around, righted the ship in the second half. In the National League, only two starters had a better strikeout rate than Peralta. Only two starters allowed fewer hits than Freddy Peralta. But Patrick Corbin's the only starter who allowed home runs at a higher rate than Freddy. So it wasn't the hits, it was the home runs that were the issue for Freddy. His walk rate actually was better this year than it had been previously. Reached 200 strikeouts for the first time. Up and down career, up and down season. But he was pretty good this year, and I think it cemented his status as a quality big league starter. I'm giving Freddie a B+ for the year. Wade Miley was pretty good, and he has been for a number of years. Since 2018, every year he's thrown at least 15 innings throughout 2020 when he threw like 9 innings. Sub-4 ERA in all 5 of those years. Continued that this year. He's kind of the opposite of the modern pitcher. Just struck out just 79 batters in 120 innings, which was the lowest rate in the NL for a pitcher that didn't play his home games in Colorado. But he was the king of weak contact. 234 batting average on balls in play. That was the lowest among all pitchers with at least 120 innings. 93rd percentile in hard hit rate. 83rd percentile in average exit velo. Stranded runners at a high rate. People say that's luck. Maybe it is. Blake Snell, Clayton Kershaw, and then Wade Miley was third in strand rate. And he averages 90 miles an hour on his fastball, which was lower than all but 4 other NL starters. I don't know how Miley does it, but he's continuing to do it, and he did it again this year. Another B+, Wade Miley, overall solid year. Colin Ray, no real expectations, minor league deal, 20 major league innings over the previous 6 years. He didn't wow, but he provided much needed stability. 4.55 ERA, almost average. in the NL for a starter. And it was, I think that was pretty impressive for a guy that's really barely pitched in the major leagues over the past few years. Another B plus for Colin Ray. I'm giving B pluses everywhere, but they've all like overperformed, either overperformed their expectations or they've just been consistently good like Burns.
Really, when you think about the Brewers pitching staff, I mean, they were the best in ERA across all of baseball. So we kind of jokingly laugh about Tom Hodrecourt's harsh grades in the Journal Sentinel growing up. But I guess if there's a year where the rotation should be all in the A's and B's, I feel like this might be the year. So I guess continue on. I'm curious here to hear some of the grades of the likes of Julio Teheran, who had a similar up and down year as Freddie, of course, in a little bit of a different way.
Yeah, we'll start out with Adrian Hauser and then Teheran and who's the last guy? Eric Lauer, believe it or not. Remember Eric Lauer. He was a Brewer this year. But Adrian Hauser, kind of the forgotten member. Even I feel like fans were much more satisfied with the work of Colin Ray than they were of Adrian Hauser. But Hauser's been pretty stable in the back end of the rotation for a few years now. Started off well, poorly, but on the injured list with a groin injury. But after he returned, he was solid. He improved his strikeout rate by 5%, improved his walk rate by 3%. Velo was down by about a mile an hour, but he did increase his extension, creating the effect of a more velocity, basically, more effective velocity. So all things considered, low fours ERA. Adrian Hauser was steady. I'd give Hauser a B, not a B plus, but I'd give him a B. Julio Teheran is kind of an interesting case. He came in out of nowhere. He was pitching in AAA for the Padres. He had thrown five big league innings over the previous 2 years. And then after he signed with the Brewers, six earned runs in his first 35 innings, averaged almost six innings a start in those first six starts. But over his last eight appearances, 7.18 ERA. So kind of similar to Freddie, a tale of two halves for Julio Teheran. So his final line, 4.40 ERA, 71 innings, very low strikeout numbers, but he was key to a rotation that really needed some arms that could just soak up innings. That was at a time when Woodruff was out, Lauer was struggling, Hauser I think had just come back, Miley was hurt, and Teheran came in there and was, I mean, he was excellent. So even though he ended up with just an okay final line, he still was pretty good for the Brewers. B minus for Julio Teheran for his work with the Brewers. Eric Lauer, this one was not as good, unfortunately. Over the past 4 years, he spent 4 years with the Brewers. His ERAs by year, 1309, 319, 369, 656. A weird sandwich trend there. But his 656 mark this year probably marks the end of his Brewers tenure. I would expect him to be non-tendered. It was kind of just a rough year from start to finish. Hoping to build off last year where he had, I think, a career high in innings and a career low in ERA among his seasons with at least 130, 140 innings. But he ended up being optioned to AAA. Things didn't go well there. Went back to Arizona to get his mind right, go to the pitching lab, see if they could fix some mechanical issues, get his velo back, and was called back up to the Brewers at the end, but allowed 8-9 runs in 3 or 4 innings. Just a bad year for Eric Lauer overall. We'll end it on a down note with an F for Eric Lauer.
Yeah, the one player who did not have quite the year that you were hoping for, certainly Eric Lauer. And Adrian Hauser does get overlooked. I mean, the value of a guy on the back end of the bullpen or back end of the rotation like him is certainly significant. So Hauser's been good. I think Teheran, if you think about, he had that stretch of what, 5 or 6 starts where he was excellent. I mean, dominant, really. Like if you could have picked when in the season he'd have those 5 or 6 starts, besides of course like the playoffs or cherry picking a game here or there, like that was the exact time that you would want him to do that. And so I mean, that the timing of that was couldn't have been better. And by the time he fell off, it was like, well, Miley's back, Woodruff's coming back, pitchers are more established. Like the timing of his up and down, Freddie was pitching out of his mind. So it was like the timing of that actually worked really well. Colin Ray was pitching well. So it was like he was the lone guy who pitched really well early and then kind of fell off. So that worked out well. The only thing I think I would have a significant difference in grade would be Wade Miley. I think he earned far better than a B plus for me. I would have probably given Miley an A because when he came into the season, I think best case scenario to me at the start of the season, I was like, best case scenario, Miley has a year like this. Granted, he was hurt for part of the year, but A, maybe A minus. I thought his year was underrated, and to me that was the best case scenario 2023 Wade Miley that we were going to have.
Maybe. I think so. Expectations certainly are a big factor in how we grade, but there is more than expectations, because I think if Corbin Burns reaches his ceiling, that should be a better grade than Wade Miley. If you think about a school project, there's some of it is the expectations that you're brought in with, or like if it's a group project, what role you might fulfill. But in the end, it's about the quality of the project, or at least it should be about the quality of the project. So if you're Corbin Burns and you're in a pitching class, Corbin Burns could have a worse year for his expectations in his pitching class, and he probably will still get a B+, versus Wade Miley might pitch his tail off in this hypothetical pitching class with Dr. Chris Hook, and Wade Miley might only get a B+.
We'll stick with the analogy there, but you're right. I mean, in terms of the end product matters, but this was the best case scenario of a season for Miley. Sure, he could have stayed healthy, but you knew going into the year he probably wasn't going to stay healthy the entire season. But yeah, I mean, an outstanding year for the Brewers rotation nonetheless, and every pitcher, less Eric Lauer, an A or B ranking somewhere in there from you, David. So let's move to the bullpen. I'm sure there's a lot more positive grades here. I'd say let's just start out with none other than Devin Williams.
Yeah, Williams really lived up to the expectations. He had 1.53 ERA in 58 innings, 87 strikeouts, tied for fifth in Major League Baseball with 36 saves. It was, believe it or not, his first full year as a closer. I kind of forget about that, but it was his first full year, and he already cemented himself as one of the best closers in baseball. Hitters hit just 0.97 off his changeup, which was best in all of baseball, with at least 50 plate appearances ending on a changeup. Actually, one pitcher below him in the rankings was Brandon Woodruff, who had 0.98 opponent batting average on the changeup. The only real knock on Williams was his playoff outing, that rough outing in Game 1. I don't want to put too much weight into that, but Williams did everything they could have asked for him in the regular season, but the playoff outing, I will knock him, so I'll push him from an A+ to an A. I still think Williams had an excellent year. Yoel Piamps came in with pretty low expectations. He had some success in 2022, 55 innings, 3.23 ERA between Kansas City and Oakland, but he really stepped up in 23. One of seven relievers across baseball with 70-plus innings and a sub-3 ERA, 27 holds on the year, really emerged as a quality setup option. A for Yoel Piamps. I don't think he really could have done much better. Elvis Peguero had way lower expectations than Yoel Piamps. 9.15 ERA across 20 big league innings with the Angels in 21 and 22. I didn't really think Peguero was going to do much for the Brewers this year, but he had a 3.38 ERA in 61 innings, 21 holds. Really, instead of the high strikeout rate, limited the power numbers. 2.91 slugging against his slider, 3.15 slugging against his sinker. When you keep the ball on the ground, you're going to be very successful. And that's what Peguero did. Peguero did have a slight hiccup in August, but still had a good year. B+ for Elvis Peguero. Hobie Milner, definition of reliability. Throw him in there. It seemed like he got out of any situation. Inherited runners, clean inning, lefty, righty. Didn't really matter. 1.82 ERA in 64 innings. Only three relievers across baseball through as many innings with a better ERA. He also was really the only main lefty in the pen. They started out with him as the only lefty. Bennett Souza came up for a short amount of time. Thomas Pinone pitched the fateful Matt Bush game in Pittsburgh. They had Andrew Chafin in the second half, Ethan Small here and there. None of them really did much as a lefty reliever, though, and Hobie Milner had to shoulder that burden. Really, Hobie Milner could not have done any better than he did. 1.82 ERA, A+ for Hobie Milner. The first A+ of the day goes to Hobie Milner. Bryce Wilson, just as good as Hobie Milner, really. 70-plus innings, sub-3 ERA, just like Piamps, one of the seven relievers. He entered 2023 with a 5.54 ERA, mostly as a starter, but still mid-5s ERA. And the Brewers were hoping he could provide some length out of the pen. And he exceeded all expectations with a 2.58 ERA. Dirty work, long reliever, mop-up, extra innings. Kind of an old-school reliever that you throw out there to eat up innings. A for Bryce Wilson. Really, maybe A+, actually. I said A, but again, I don't think Bryce Wilson really could have done any better. Maybe B, Devin Williams. I don't know. Abner Uribe, also very good. 1.76 ERA across 30 innings. High walk rate, but also a high strikeout rate. The big thing to me was I thought they were going to break him in with low leverage opportunities, but they got him into high leverage situations pretty quick, setting him up to the point where I think he'll be maybe a seventh or eighth inning guy in 2024. He was really, really good. He had a couple blips on the radar. He had the, was it four walk outing, maybe in late August or mid-August. He had, I think, another outing. Well, he had the playoff outing, game two, back-to-back days, but still game two. So he did have a few of those outings, still was able to keep the numbers pretty good. A-minus for Abner Uribe, really a solid year overall. Matt Bush and Andrew Chafin, we're grouping them together. Both were terrible. 9.58 ERA for Bush, 5.82 ERA for Chafin. Really no positives. F for both of them. And lastly, Trevor McGill. He was not that great in the first half after being acquired for cash, but he was really good in the second half. 2.70 ERA, 32 Ks in 20 innings. McGill did a nice job. I'll give Trevor McGill a B.
Yeah, that wraps up. I mean, that wraps up just a really good bullpen the Brewers had this past season. And I think I would have even been, I think you were even harsher than I would have been. I agree. Bryce Wilson deserved an A+. Hobie deserved an A+. I would be tempted to even give Piamps an A+. I mean, the output he had was arguably better than Bryce Wilson, given the leverage too. So Piamps was really good. I mean, Abner Uribe, think about, again, expectations of him coming up. We didn't even know going into the season that he was going to be up in the majors. He started the season in Double A. So to think that he would be our, you know, pitching in high leverage situations in the playoffs as a Brewer would have been borderline unthinkable, I think, going into the season. So I would have given him at least an A just for that. And he does, you know, set himself up to be in the discussion for a seventh inning or eighth inning role going into next year. And way too early in terms of thinking about who might close games after Devin Williams, but he certainly has a closer's profile when it comes to his stuff. So anything else that you'd add in terms of the pitching staff as a whole, what would be your overall pitching staff for the Brewers this year?
I would give them an A. They really couldn't have done much better. They led the league in team ERA, which certainly was aided by the defense. The defense was very good. That could have even been maybe, you know, 0.2 on the ERA, 0.25, depending on how impactful you think defense is. But, I mean, regardless, they led the league in ERA. They did what they needed to do. They had 10 pitchers probably that had sub-4 ERAs. The bullpen was one of the best. The rotation was one of the best. The depth guys stepped up when needed. Burns, a little bit of a down year, but still a frontline starter. Woodruff went healthy, frontline starter. Williams, excellent in the back end of the bullpen. Really, pretty much everything went right in the rotation, except for Woodruff's injury and the bullpen, excellent. So I give them an A. I don't really think they could have done much better. If you're not going to give them an A this year, I don't think that the Brewers pitching staff will ever get an A in their entire history.
I wish we would have done our homework on this and gone back to see like the Journal Sentinel grades of the Brewers pitching staff over the years, because I wonder what the best grade the Brewers pitching staff got from, like, would have been, like, I don't know, 2012, 2013 to like 20, I mean, even 2018, when the Brewers were obviously a one win from the World Series, the pitching staff was very different. The bullpen would have been obviously probably the bullpen that year might have been an A+. I don't know, A or A+ that year. But the rotation would not have been. So I don't even, is it fair to say this is the best pitching staff the Brewers have had, or the best year, I should say, that the Brewers have had as a franchise? Or, I mean, I'm thinking to 2021, of course. But yeah, I mean, is this the best year we've ever seen from the Brewers pitching staff as a team in franchise history?
I think it might be the deepest 1 through 13 on the staff, or if we're looking at 1 through 10, maybe back in 1979. 2021 and 23, I think, were pretty clearly the two best years in franchise history. I think if Woodruff were healthy, they were set up better for the playoffs in this run, because you didn't have to rely on some of the guys that I would say they help you get to the playoffs, but you don't want to throw them in the playoffs, like Hunter Strickland, to some degree Aaron Ashby in that playoff round. So I think this pitching staff was deeper, but they had the higher end, the more elite talent in 2021. And like this year, you got more innings out of Freddie, but he was better in 21 overall when healthy. So I think you can go back and forth with either of them. I would say this year deeper, 21 higher end, but also lower floor.
Yeah, you're right, because we had Strickland pitching in high leverage games in 21, and Aaron Ashby. So you're right, definitely. I like this. If I were to pick my preferred, like if you said which, you know, going into next year, like which pitching staff would you rather have, the 2021 output or the 2023? I'd probably take 2023, because top to bottom they were so solid. And even like in game one of the series against Arizona, and after Burns giving the short start, like thinking about the guys that we were going, that were throwing out there, and the guys that the D-backs were throwing out there, who, you know, as they were playing the Dodgers, were being touted as having this great bullpen. I mean, they had guys pitching against the Brewers with, you know, ERAs in the fours and fives early in that game one of the series. And the Brewers had, you know, McGill, Uribe, Piamps, Peguero, Williams, like really, really good guys for many stretches of innings. So I really think this is the best pitching season we've ever seen in franchise history. Really sad, heartbreaking to see the season end as quickly as it did, given that. But I think the pitching staff was outstanding, and I'm looking forward to next episode, where, of course, we'll be grading the Brewers hitters. I'm curious to see some of your grades for even guys like Yelich, Contreras, Canna in his short time, or even like Frelick and Weimer. So I'll be looking forward to that episode. Again, that'll be next episode. And maybe if we have any other news on Brandon Woodruff, Craig Counsell, who knows, maybe Corbin Burns will be traded by then. No, I don't think that'll happen. But we'll be here again next week for another regularly scheduled episode. As always, this is Peter and David Go signing off into the off season here. Go Brewers.